The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 9:05, Wednesday, the 21st of June, 2023. This is the longest day of the year, I believe. 17, 18 hours of daylight. And then after this, well, the evenings will start drawing in. Not straight away, but it is that time of the year. Can you believe it already? Okay. Well, we're still at the start of the summer. Let's look at it like that. All right. Okay. We've a busy show, as always, for you today. There's lots of news, lots of stuff emerging over the course of the last 24 hours that will have you right across. So stay exactly where you are. Get involved in the conversation. We want you to have your views. If you've never texted a radio station before to express your view, but you've got your views, well, why don't you share them with 80-odd thousand people that listen to us weekly? 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and texts to that number. Stick the number in your phone. You'll never know when you might need it. You can call Caroline or Niamh too on 07491 25000. And if you're an emailer, and I never really have been one for emailing, unless I have to through work. I don't think I've ever really done it for any other reason. But anyway, if you are an emailer, it's comments@highlandradio.com. And you can get in touch with us that way. Right, let's run through the papers this morning. We'll start with the locals, of course, as we always do. The Innish Times, they have a story. Their headline reads, "Man charged with raping woman twice." A Donegal man has been charged with the rape of a woman in Inishowen. The accused man, who is in his 30s, cannot be named to protect the identity of his alleged victim. He's charged with raping the woman twice at the same named location on September 29th, 2019. The case was mentioned at Letterkenny District Court before Judge Etain Cunningham. On to the Donegal Post this morning. The fishing industry is facing the gravest challenges of our time, with a decline in the number of young people joining the industry and a serious decline in profits reaped from the processing and exporting sector, according to the Chief Executive Officer of the Irish Fish Processors and Exporters Association, Brendan Byrne. And I'm, as an outsider looking on, it seems to be me, like an industry that's lost a generation, may lose another, and is kind of being, there's no future for it. It feels like a sunset industry to me. Not that that's what I want, but that's how it seems to be being treated by the powers that be. Maybe that is not the case. If you're in the industry, you want to have a conversation about it, you know the numbers, get in touch. Well, the CEO, Brendan Byrne, said there is no doubt we're facing the greatest challenges of our time as a result of Brexit and the TCA agreement. I suppose, historically, he says, we have been treated very unfairly by the Common Fisheries Policy. They only allow us to catch, on average, 15% of all the fish in Irish waters. The other 85% is shared among other EU countries. Now, also, this is a by the by, and it's probably nothing, but maybe you are someone who goes out for a fish out there and chatting to a few people who are fishing something as simple as mackerel. And they're reporting, they said they're very, very small, and one or two of them concluded that is that because all the bigger fish are being swooped up by the nets of these big industrial ships, these factories that are going around our coasts? You would hope not. But that's what some people who fish on a regular basis suggest. Now, it is early in the year, it's only June, but some said to me that it's only wee mackerel that are about because the big ones are being caught accidentally in nets. Could there be anything to that? 086 60 25000. Michael's walk for Alzheimer's from Scotland to Rafoe. That's the Finn Valley Voice. A Scottish man has walked from Fife in Scotland to Rafoe in Donegal in memory of his grandfather and to raise funds for Alzheimer's Scotland. In 1947, Vincent Hamilton, a Rafoe man, left for Scotland with two of his brothers, Jack and Dick, to find work. Sadly, he passed away this year suffering from Alzheimer's at the age of 94. And there's more on that epic walk on the inside of that paper. No one wants to see increased taxes or indeed, it seems, more spending on capital projects. That's the big conversation that's happening at the moment as the conversation really starts to talk about what might be contained in Budget 2024. The front of the Irish Independent reads that a budget giveaway risks causing damage to the economy, the central bank has warned. The message of caution comes 3 months out from Budget Day and could scotch Fine Gael plans for lower taxes on middle-income earners, a call that has divided the coalition. And we live in a strange world. Again, sorry for the caveat, but I'm not obviously a financial expert. But what I'm hearing, the conversations I'm hearing is that those that are squeezed and poor, you have to leave them like that, right? Because if you make life easier for them or more affordable, then inflation goes up and then it's bad for the economy and so on and so forth. So when we have a economy that some people believe is performing to its maximum, right? And I think most of you listening, some of you are well off, and that's fantastic, right? But a lot of people are the squeezed middle, whereby both of you or one of you is working in the house and you're just covering the cost of things. And maybe a young one's head coming towards third level education. And you're thinking, well, how are we going to afford that? Or maybe you are on a lower income or unemployed and every day's a struggle. It's difficult. You're one of the people that are going to the food banks. And rather than you being helped, it seems that those, and I listen to people talking about this on the radio, and they seem to have plenty of money. They are saying you need to stay in that position. You need to not help you, because if we do help you, everything becomes more expensive. Now, that there's a serious issue with the balance of the economy there, isn't there? That helping people, easing pressure on the squeezed middle, or indeed more targeted supports for those who are struggling, it seems from what I hear from experts that to help you is bad for the economy and that you must stay as you are. This whilst the rich get richer and they don't face any further encroachments on their income or what have you, seemingly. Now, as I say, I am not a financial expert, but that to me stinks. There's something seriously missed there, that you keep your foot on people to protect the economy. But for who are you protecting the economy? When for a lot of people, they are literally living in a recession. Now, if anyone can explain that to me, how that's right or how that's fair or how a system is set up to perform like that, I'd be very interested to find out. Like, to the point whereby they're saying that these advisors and opinion makers are saying even the government can't use money to spend on capital projects, you know, greater investment. That could probably even be the defective concrete scheme, because they're afraid it would overheat the economy. But for whom? Who are they protecting? Is it us as a whole? I don't know, because we're seeing services that are poor and we're seeing lots of people that are working and not working that are under pressure. But you can't help them, they say, because that is bad for the economy. Well, anyway, as I say, that's just a take from listening to people. I don't claim to know. But if you want to talk about that, get in touch. In fact, a central bank analysis published today says higher taxes may soon be required to cool demand, tame prices and wage demands, and keep the economy overheated. So that's to say that even those that can afford to spend, you need to tax them so they stop spending. Right. And also there's a problem now that people are getting paid too much money because the economy's at full. Apparently it's at full whack and people are getting pay rises. And that's bad for the economy as well. So you getting pay rises is bad for the economy. So what you have to do is fix the economy so that A, you have less money in your pocket through tax increases. B, figure out a way that you don't get pay rises. And this is all to protect what? While inflation, I'll read on here, is expected to continue to ease between now and 2025, core inflation, which strips out volatile food and energy prices, is predicted to continue rising until the end of the year, reaching 4.9% on average this year and outpacing headline inflation by 2025. But we, as the ordinary folk, are going to have to start getting a handle on this and stop having people talking about us and our lives and our situations and start taking a little bit of control, one might feel. In the Irish Times today, a key member of the Standards in Public Office Commission, SIPO, warned of the risk of credibility issues emerging for the ethics watchdog when it rejected a complaint against Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. Now, again, I don't want to sound like a moaner this morning, but this person doesn't have their finger on the pulse if they're concerned about credibility issues emerging. I think they're out there. Anyway, the concerns raised by Controller and Auditor General Seamus McCarthy are revealed in a note dissenting from a vote by three SIPO members against holding a preliminary inquiry into Mr. Varadkar's leak of a draft medical contract. His observations were released after the Irish Times appealed a Freedom of Information ruling on the case to the Information Commissioner, who decides on such appeals. There's not a ton in the papers, by the way, today. I'm not going to lie to you. So we're going to be rattling through them. The Sun this morning, fuel prices have soared 4% since last month following a rise in excise duty on petrol and diesel. New figures from AA Ireland show the average price for petrol now stands at £1.65, and it is much cheaper elsewhere, with the average price for diesel at £1.53. Duty on petrol increased by 6% per litre and 5% per litre on diesel on June 1st. And on average, petrol prices have increased by 8% per litre and diesel by 6% per litre. Following the June 1st increase, another increase will come into effect on September 1st. So I think really what those figures tell us is that the increases are in line with the tax increases and not gouging. That's what I think they're suggesting. More on this story, and we're going to be talking to someone who I believe has dived to the Titanic. No, have they? Yeah, okay. We're going to be speaking to someone who dived to the Titanic previously. They're going to be speaking to us in the context of the ongoing search by rescuers who have as little as 24 hours to save the Titanic explorers before their oxygen runs out. This is the Irish Daily Mail now. So unconfirmed reports coming out of America. And this is good news, but it must be, I think, but it must be horrendous for those if they're still alive trapped in this submersible, is that a plane or a boat or something is picking up banging every half an hour in the vicinity of where contact was lost with this submarine. So as it stands now, I don't know how they retrieve it or how they find it. As I said in the show yesterday, I don't understand why it doesn't have all bells and whistles to help track it. But then reading on here or reading in another paper, this thing is put together almost like with sticky tape. The pilot uses an Xbox controller to steer it, right? So it's an adapted Xbox controller. The lighting inside is bought from a camping shop. And you have to sign away your rights getting into it because it was deemed to be so dangerous. But anyway, at a dramatic press conference last night, US Coast Guards revealed the complexity and sheer scale of the search operation to trace their missing submarine. Now, to put this into context, it took ages to find the Titanic, which is huge. This thing is tiny by comparison. They said the cramped vessel with five men aboard had just 40 hours of breathable air, and it could be used up by around 10 a.m. tomorrow Irish time. Now, there's ships, planes and underwater drones looking for it. But as I say, what emerged overnight, and it's not going to make the papers this morning, is that they are picking up sort of sonar banging in half an hour periods. And they believe that this could well be them reaching out for help. Just a follow-up from the story yesterday, it's in the Irish Daily Star. Dave Fanning has publicly apologised to Christy Dignam's family after he was slammed for his inappropriate tribute to the late singer. The Aslan frontman sadly died last Tuesday after a 10-year cancer battle. Fanning was among the contributors paying tribute to Christy last Wednesday on Claire Byrne's RTE Radio 1 show, but fans were left angered after he said Christy blew it royally with his success due to his substance abuse. Fanning broke his silence and said he was wrong and that he was actually trying to highlight deeper issues in Ireland during the 80s. Again, different time, different place, maybe would have been better. In a statement, he said he missed the mark and said his tribute was ill-timed and in poor taste and went on to apologise to his family. And it was a fulsome apology, in fairness to him, and also to say how much he liked and respected Christy and the rest of Aslan. And very finally, in the Irish Daily Mirror this morning, price rises for fruit and veg are inevitable due to a perfect storm of poor weather and producers leaving the market, it was claimed yesterday. Shortfalls in staples such as broccoli, carrots, cabbage, cauliflower, onions and potatoes are coming. That follows a scarcity of cucumber, lettuce, peppers, raspberries, strawberries, tomatoes and turnips earlier this year. Paul Brophy, a grower and former chair of the Irish Farmers Association's horticultural division, said, We're backed into a corner because we are dependent on very high prices of imported products. Okay, so that story is going to rumble again. It's back. A county-by-county breakdown was released this week, which shows 1,300 complaints were made about lawyers during the last year in Dublin. It was the top of the table, 504. Donegal had 53 complaints, which ranked it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th. Brian Doherty is CEO of the Legal Services Regulatory Authority and joins us now. Brian, thanks for joining us. I do appreciate your time today. Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon. I had the wrong fader up. Sorry, Brian. Good morning to you once again.
Good morning. Very glad to be here.
That's a me problem. Okay. So where do we, when we talk of 1,352 complaints last year, does that show a robust, transparent complaint system? Does it show that people have growing concerns in the work of lawyers? What's your read on it?
Well, it does display a level of faith in the regulator, and that consumers are bringing complaints to us, to the LSRA, in the hope that we can assist them to resolve them. It doesn't cause concern in relation to the delivery of legal services across the state. We've done other research that would show that there's a high level of appreciation and satisfaction broadly, but in the delivery of services, sometimes issues do occur. And thankfully, we're here to provide a free and independent service should that arise, to help to resolve complaints and to investigate them where necessary.
Now, the 1,352 complaints, is that the totality or those that were deemed to be admissible?
No, that's the totality received us in the year. So it's 1,052 complaints. So that's down 15% from 2021, where we had 1,599 complaints. That reduction is generally due to a reduction in complaints in relation to banking undertakings, where banks have left the marketplace and had made complaints before they exited.
What are the consequences for those? Like, what happens next, right? So I ring up a complaint, Brian, with the Legal Services Regulatory Authority, and it's deemed that my complaint is admissible. So what is the what happens then?
Okay, well, so should someone make a complaint and is determined to be admissible, there are three categories of complaints. So I'll deal with complaints about inadequate services or excessive costs first. So if someone feels that the service they've got just wasn't up to scratch, or they feel that they've been overcharged and those complaints have been determined to be admissible, then we'll attempt to resolve that complaint between the complainant and the legal practitioner. So we can either do that by attempting to mediate ourselves, or we have a panel of mediators that we work with. And we have success where we can get both parties to agree, and that's the matter resolved then. If we fail to resolve it, if it's not possible to do so, then the LSRA itself can go on to determine the complaint. So we can decide that the service is fine, or the costs weren't excessive, or where we find that the service was inadequate, we can direct the legal practitioner to fix the service or transfer documents or perhaps pay compensation to the complainant. If we decide that the costs were excessive, then we can direct the legal practitioner to refund the costs or waive the costs. And that's all subject then possibly to a review by a review committee. So our decisions, there's an appeal mechanism effectively. For complaints of misconduct, well, they get sent to a independent complaints committee, which sits a bit like a court, but you can only hear, I can hear evidence and affidavit, and you can also get evidence directly from the complainant and legal practitioner. And they have a range of sanctions at their disposal should they find that the complaint effectively is upheld. At the more serious end, there's actually another body called the Legal Practitioners Disciplinary Tribunal, and they deal with matters where there might be misconduct. And again, they have a wider range of sanction, from censure all the way up to applying to the High Court to have someone struck off, or that they're restricted in their level of practice as either a solicitor or a barrister.
Well, in that first group, what happens if they don't follow the directions of the LSRA?
Well, that's an interesting question, because that's the space we find ourselves in 2022. And I would stress a small number of cases. It was in 7 cases where we'd issued a direction and the legal practitioner either ignored it or failed to comply with the direction. And that direction may have been to pay compensation or to hand over a file. And when that doesn't happen, the LSRA has no hesitation in taking the matter to the High Court and applying for an order of enforcement. I would say, though, that it's something that we shouldn't have to do. These are legal professionals. This wastes valuable time and resources of the LSRA. It adds to the cost of the LSRA, which is passed on to legal practitioners by way of a levy and ultimately passed on to the consumer. So disappointing that we were reporting in 2022 of having to make 7 applications to the High Court to enforce statutory orders made under the regulatory scheme.
this is not a criticism of solicitors or barristers, but you could argue that perhaps they're well equipped to frustrate a process or delay a process, given their knowledge base. Do you find that happens an awful lot, or are they very quick to work with you?
Well, we've about 23% of the cases that we received last year were resolved. So that those are cases where legal practitioner engages with the LSRA, engages with the complainant, and they find an early resolution to the complaint. So about a quarter of matters brought to us successfully resolved between the parties. So that's heartening. There are some legal practitioners who don't feel that they can resolve these matters, and those cases can become quite drawn out and quite contentious on occasion.
And I can imagine it's a complicated area. If I'm picking up correctly, like, a lot of this could be feelings and opinions that people might have. Do you know what I mean? And then you have to sort of maybe represent those to, or maybe that's these are the ones that are filtered out. But you know, then the lawyer or barrister might have a very different take on the situation. But I suppose that's what the whole process is about, Brian. It's getting to the bottom of all of that.
It is indeed, and you understand that. Whenever people seek legal services, it's frequently because something in their life has gone wrong. So maybe they're being sued, or they're suing someone, or perhaps it's a criminal matter or a family law matter, and those things are all quite emotive. Or perhaps it's in relation to a conveyance of a house, which can be quite stressful. So frequently, consumers, whenever they come to us, there's already something that's gone wrong. But I would say, and one of the key messages, there's a lot of resources on our website, www.lsra.ie, and we publish reports every 6 months, which we hope will assist complainants and legal practitioners, and they explain the complaints process, the type of complaints we receive, the type of complaints we can deal with, and sort of frequently, we put in issues that frequently occur in relation to legal services as a way of explaining to consumers of legal services as to what actually might happen in certain cases, and for legal practitioners to see where there are risk areas in relation to complaints.
Yeah, and I presume then a typical example of that might be, and we get a lot of calls in here, sometimes we do a legal item, Brian, whereby someone might say they've been waiting for a year for a will to be resolved, and they might think that's unacceptable, make a complaint, and then you might determine, well, sometimes that can actually be the case. Is that, it's that area, isn't it? It's complicated sometimes.
Absolutely, and in one of our reports, we've actually done a focus on wills and probate to try and explain some of the timelines. And sometimes we get complaints where we look at it and go, right, that has taken too long.
Yeah.
But there's others where we look at it and see, look, there's family circumstances underway. There could be a tax issue. There could be beneficiaries who are hard to track down, who've emigrated, etc. So there could be issues that elongate that. But certainly, wills and probate and the administration of the states has been a theme since we started taking complaints. It's in relation to inadequate service complaints, it's the third highest category of issues that lead to complaints is around probate, with litigation and conveyancing being the first. And again, excessive costs, we didn't receive many complaints, and we received 5, but it's one of the complaints in there. But again, I would say on the website, www.lsra.ie,
it's a good result.
And in our reports, loads of information that might assist any consumers.
I don't understand why we don't have a central database for wills, you know, where they are loaded and stored, especially, you know, inter-country, inter-county. It would streamline things to a great extent, I would imagine. Brian, finally, at what point does someone contact you then? Do you know what I mean? Like, say, for instance, if you're engaging with an ombudsman, there's a process you have to go through in terms of first raising your complaint with the body itself, and you've dissatisfied, then you can move on to the next level. So at what point in a process, when someone's unhappy with that, Brian, should they contact the LSRA?
Well, they do. We encourage, although it's not mandatory, but we encourage where possible that if you have an issue with your legal practitioner and you're a client of a legal practitioner, to raise the matter with them in the first instance, because often, again, these things can be resolved if it's a communication issue, if it's something simple. So we do encourage that, but it's not mandatory. You can come straight to us. The one thing is, though, as we are independent, we can't provide legal advice. So if someone comes to us saying, do I have grounds for complaint, unfortunately, we have to, the complaint has to be lodged before it enters the statutory process. But again, as I said, plenty of information on our website, and we can also be contacted, lsra-inbox@lsra.ie, or the complaints email address, complaints@lsra.ie, should anyone have any concerns or queries.
Indeed, Brian, and I think it'd probably be helpful for the public, for them to let them know in interactions with people that they're aware of the LSRA as well, and who's to say that that might not even help resolve situations before they're escalated. All right, Brian, thanks for your time this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Brian Doherty, CEO of the Legal Services Regulatory Authority. Good morning to John, Annie, Anna and Charlie. They're amongst our watchers today. We stream the show every day, and we have for years now, on our social media and website, so people can watch the programme. You can put it up on your big screen, see most of our guests. You'll be able to see our next guest, for an example. We play some videos out too. If we're talking about like a lady yesterday whose house was struck by lightning, we were able to show that video for you. It's a different way for you to engage with the show if it suits you in your life. YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, that's good for your phone, your tablet, your laptop, your smart TV. Most of your TVs are smart TV and have the YouTube app on them. You might as well use it. We're also on Facebook, Highland Radio Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport, and you can also watch us on Twitter. Oh, I'm not really into Twitter anymore, but that be that as it may, you can still watch it there or on our website, highlanderradio.com. And Charlie on Facebook made an interesting point. It's a pity all the asylum seekers drowned in the Mediterranean aren't getting the same media coverage as a few billionaires on a sightseeing trip. And it is a perfectly valid point, and it is a human condition. It is just the way it is. If you have two newspapers that are sat down in a newsagent's, and one has this submarine story with all the graphics and stuff, and one has the story of one has the story of that awful, awful tragedy, mind-boggling tragedy in the Mediterranean, Charlie, and I'll ask you directly and everyone else as well, if there's 100 copies of each, which do you think would sell out first? And I would argue that the public would go for the submarine story. I mean, this is five people who are lost at sea, and the story is rolling on its headlines right across the world. But if this were five people that, God forbid, sadly died in a road crash in south of France, you would never hear about it. You would simply know it. You would never know it actually happened. But it's just something about these stories. It's the uniqueness of it. It's the fact that it's a submarine and people can say, God, I would hate that, or whatever it might be. It's the fact that it's at sea, and it just is a story that's eventually going to be made into a film. And as I say, I don't know exactly why, but that's just the way it is. The public would be far more interested in this story than they might the other one that was mentioned. And as I say, it's probably not a good thing, but I think it is the way it is. Now, the government has cleared the way for three new vet schools as part of a package that promises up to 1,300 extra college places a year in healthcare and veterinary. The University of Limerick, Atlantic Technological University, which is of more interest to us, of course, and South East Technology University, or Technological University, have been approved to open vet schools, which will treble the intake of students vets nationally. Dr. Orla Flynn is president of the Atlantic Technological University and joins us now. Good morning to you, Orla. Thank you so much for your time.
Morning, Greg. Delighted to be with you.
Right. How significant is this news for ATU in particular, Orla?
We are absolutely delighted with the news. I think it's a ringing endorsement for the quality of education that we offer. And it also sends a strong signal of our ambition for regional provision right across the northern and western region. What was particularly pleasing for me about the announcement this morning, and we look forward to hearing more detail on it during the day, but what's particularly pleasing to me is it kind of reinforces the wisdom of establishing technological universities, because it's allowed us to bring our teams together from Donegal, Sligo, Mayo and Galway, and having staff collaborating to respond to these kind of calls has really borne fruit for us now in ATU.
I mean, it's very early days, but how might this look, do you think, in terms of what might be provided, how and where? And as I say, Orla and the listeners would know, we're really early days on this, but do you sort of have a vision in your mind?
Yeah, so I want firstly to pay a big shout out to a number of colleagues really who led on this. So I might start with the veterinary, and the veterinary was led by two wonderful colleagues, Dr. Joanne Gallagher, based in Letterkenny, and Joanne already offers veterinary nursing, and that provided us with a very solid basis for considering a bid in the first place. And very happy then to have Dr. Joanne Gallagher collaborating with Dr. Edna Curley, who is the principal of Montbellew Agricultural College in East Galway. And that's a working farm. You know, we have cattle and sheep, and the opportunity to provide access to animals and handling of animals. And they've come up with a really innovative bid, and it will involve close collaboration with veterinary practitioners in Donegal and in Galway. But it also will involve building facilities in Letterkenny. And that was part of our bid. So the students will be predominantly based throughout their studies in Donegal, in Letterkenny, and they will spend a semester in Montbellew as well on the farm. Really innovative bid. I'm delighted to see that it got to the final stage, and I'm delighted to see it included in the announcement. Because again, the Northern Western region is very underserved in terms of provision of this kind. Then move on to pharmacy, and pharmacy again points to the strength of our science and medical science in particular across ATU. And that bid was led by colleagues in Sligo and supported by colleagues in Donegal and in Galway. So delighted to see that one over the ground. And there are a number of new buildings already coming on stream, or hopefully later in this year. And, you know, so we're looking forward to being able to maybe swiftly get programs up and running there. And they will be based in Sligo. And not forgetting our nursing. So nursing was also included in the expressions of interest. And listeners might be aware that we're also involved in a tertiary application as well. But this particular nursing call was for additional nursing places. And again, Donegal is part of that in Letterkenny. Sligo is part of that through our St. Angela's involvement, and you know, we're looking forward to St. Angela's integrating into ATU a bit later in the year, and of course our Mayo campus as well. So again, that really real strong provision. Our neighbours in Galway, of course, have also seen success in pharmacy and in nursing too. So, you know, we are seeing that strong regional provision, and I really would like to see the government follow through on their commitment to that when it comes to the delivery.
Yeah, and indeed, how does that work? Because there's some speculation that the likes of the UCD might have a head start in certain areas because they might have the infrastructure in place. You've already recognised that there will be some infrastructural development required, some already underway. So when do you hope maybe and in which disciplines to start delivering places across the ATU campuses?
Well, we're already trying to increase our intake in nursing, as I mentioned, through the tertiary award provision and through the extra places scenario. And in that regard, the only thing that's holding us back there is the availability of placements. And there's been a lot of engagement with both the Department of Health and the HSE in that regard. And that dialogue will continue. For this particular call that was announced this morning, we have indeed looked for capital investment. So, you know, that might take a bit longer. If we were fairly sure of that, we certainly could start provision in rented facility or rented premises and allow the building work to catch up on that. But I think the earliest intake for the pharmacy would have been September 2024. And the earliest provision for veterinary start would have been the following September. And that would have been our aim there with the building to catch up afterwards. Mm. And that's certainly a possibility for us.
Yeah, I mean, it is short term too, which is good. Just in terms of the veterinary places, because that's one of the issues we've talked a bit about on this show. Like, do you anticipate less people travelling to Poland, for an example, to continue their studies? Or do you think that we'll actually see more people choosing this as a career path because they can do it perhaps arguably closer to home or within the country? Like, how do you think that the balance will be there?
Well, look, it possibly will be a combination of both, and you'd like to see it being a combination of both. I believe that there is a university in Poland that has more Irish students studying in it I think there's something like 30 of an intake this year coming. And I was talking to somebody in Galway whose daughter is studying there, and she was saying that next year, 26 in her class from Ireland, 30 coming in next year. And that's probably more than the number of Irish students studying in UCD in all of Ireland at the moment. So there's a real demand. And, you know, Ireland is strong in agriculture. And as we shift our agricultural practices, you know, towards more sustainable agriculture, I think, you know, the attention being paid to the availability of veterinary and sustainable veterinary practices will be a key part of that. Mm. I guess that there will be other people who mightn't have been thinking of veterinary, or people who might have gone down the nursing route, hoping to get into veterinary medicine afterwards. And we've had some graduates from Donegal who've gone on to become veterinary surgeons afterwards. Some of them may go straight now into a veterinary medicine route. So probably a bit of both.
You've spoken publicly about an inequality. And if I'm at any time misquoting you, please, and I'm sure you will, Doctor, correct me. But you've talked about an inequality in terms of the spend per head per student in the Northwest, you know, a lower amount of students going on to third level, the lack of professors across a certain line in the country. Is this going some way to addressing that, do you think? And if it is, how far is it going? Because I think it's really important that the public understand that there are people like you and your colleagues right at the very top of third level education in this region that are, you know, batting for the students, batting for investment, batting for the potential of the likes of the ATU to be fully realised. So frame this announcement in that conversation, and if it is a step in the right direction, you know, how large a step might that be?
Look, at Greg, it's a tiny step. It is a step in the right direction, but what it actually is an endorsement of the quality of the university that is ATU. And I think that has got to shine through. However long it takes to get that program up and running, we need to remain committed to that, because we would not be getting a program in veterinary medicine unless it was deemed to be high quality by an independent panel, a panel of experts who threw a very cold eye on all the submissions that came in. And, you know, that for me is the primary kind of really bright spark in this, that we have quality people in our university with ambition to deliver for the region. So no matter how long it takes, we're going to have to persevere and make sure that we get that over the line. So that's one thing, and I'm certainly very committed to that. The other issues are going to take longer, and I have spoken publicly. I want to do a big shout out to colleagues in the Northwest Regional Assembly. Our campuses overlap significantly with the Northern and Western region territory, the counties of the Northern and Western region. And they have excellent economists. And John Daly in particular has shared some slides recently on the kind of the inequalities in terms of disposable income per head of population is only, in Donegal, for example, is only about 75% of the national average. And none of the counties in our region are performing well in that regard. The percentage of people who have at most primary education, and that's highest, unfortunately, in our region. And again, particularly around Donegal and the border counties. So there's an awful lot of work that needs to be done. I suppose the slide that surprised me most that he shared was the investment in capital for undergraduate teaching and learning per student is lower in the Northern and Western region, 27% lower, actually. So there are a lot of hard conversations to be had. I'm willing and up for having them. But this is a step in the right direction.
And very finally, there is a strong connection, isn't there, between investment in education and then the general prosperity in a region. So if we start getting one right, it will have a knock-on effect, I presume.
Absolutely. And again, you know, we know what those benefits are. You know, there's support for research and development. It encourages partnerships, collaborations, the engagement with industry. Having a high performing university, an academic institution, means that foreign direct investment is attracted to the region. and not just attracted to establish, but attracted to grow. And we've seen that actually in Ireland and elsewhere in Ireland. We've seen where we have Science Foundation Ireland funded research centres, where we've had high performing universities, good collaborative research with industry. You know, we've seen not just FDI investment, but we've also seen reinvestment and growth and big announcements about additional funding. As institutes of technology, in a way, we single-handedly transformed the landscape when we were established as regional technical colleges, because we provided what a lot of those companies needed, and we continued to do so. But now we need to take that big leap, and we need to engage in a little bit more, well, a lot more, I would argue, of the kind of research, high value add, industry focused research that can really bring our region to the next level. There are a lot of indicators around why the Northern and Western region is a region in transition. It isn't as well performing in the innovation space. And having a university that is enabled to perform the kind of research that is needed, the presence of strong research centers of excellence, all of that will trigger growth in industry and employment.
All right, Orla, thank you very much indeed for your time. Dr. Orla Flynn, President of the Atlantic Technological University. And it's great if we get more people qualified. And as I say, that path is not for everyone. But I'll tell you one thing. I was scrolling through social media yesterday, and the amount of mums and dads and granny and granddads saying goodbye to young people who are getting on planes, go away parties, boyfriends and girlfriends, groups of friends, groups of girls, groups of boys, heading, being taken down to Dublin Airport to get on a plane to wherever they're going. And I wish them all the love and happiness, and it's exciting. And if people are choosing to do that, fantastic. You can't shackle them at home. It's brilliant. And I've found myself having to post about it on social media. I think there's so many people are leaving because they have to, because they don't see a future here. A lot of our young people, particularly here in the Northwest, don't see a future, and it's heartbreaking. So it's great if we improve education and improve people's qualifications if that's the life path they want, but we have to have opportunities for them there. It is just, it breaks my heart to see so many people going, and many people join with me in saying that. And yes, of course, we all recognise, as I mentioned, that for some it's an experience, it's exciting, they'll go away for a year, they'll come back. But there's, you've seen images of people 18, 19, 20 with their families about to board planes. And you just feel next time you see them, they'll probably have two kids and be in their late 20s or something, or not with kids. They'll just be completely different people. How big of a problem is that? How big of a problem is emigration? Are you seeing your young people having to leave? You know, I mean, as I say, let's recognise, brilliant, some people will go have the experience. But what's it like for you? I can't put myself in the position to be that conversation where John or Jane sits down and says to you, look, Mom, look, Dad, there's nothing for me here. I've a mate working out in Australia, and he says he can get me a start straight away, and I have somewhere to stay, and I can earn such and such a year or whatever it might be. Like, is that conversation happening at your kitchen table? How does it feel? Share that experience. It must be devastating. I would struggle to deal with it. Dr. Joe Kelly's with us. Dr. Joe Kelly, thanks very much for joining us. How are you keeping?
Mighty and mighty good, Greg. It's love based out there. Good morning to you.
It's good to have you on our programme. Right, you've been talking about how you've been struggling. Actually, I don't need to set it up. You come in here off the back of that conversation. What do you want to say, Joe?
Well, just to welcome the movements that the LYAT now, which is the ATU, I mean, there have been great advancements in the last year. There's no doubt about that, with the expansion and the interconnection between the different campuses, which facilitate more courses. There's a very proactive, wide-visioned attitude that is going to develop the whole Northwest. It's something that I've been watching very much so. And, I mean, I serve on the Western Development Commission, which does great work in trying to develop the west of Ireland and create opportunities for employment, culture, heritage, that kind of idea that it's worthwhile living here. The quality of life, and I've just heard you there when you were talking about young people leaving, that's a sad reality. And if you look at some of the school perspectives that children would do, Leaving Cert students maybe create books at the end of the year, you know, their hopes and their ambitions, what they liked, etc. Many of them, their ambition is to leave this country. It's a question that you've asked. It's very pertinent.
Can I ask a question, Joe? How much of that is they actually genuinely themselves feel that that's their only options, and how much is it listening to us as more mature people? Like, is it a reality that they have to, or are we creating the environment where they feel there's nothing for them? Do you get where I'm coming from? Are we talking the country down, or is it a reality that there's not enough here for them and they have to leave? Are we saying you'll never own a house, where maybe we should be saying, do you know what, the days of owning a house in this country might be behind you. Don't let that be your target. Don't let that be your ambition. Build up your resources. Rent. You don't have an anchor then, and it's a beautiful place to be. Do you know, I wonder, are we consciously or subconsciously talking them out of Ireland, or are they themselves looking around and saying there's nothing for me here?
It depends how you look at it, and it depends. You could be right on both sides of that, Greg, insofar as it's how you tell it, so to speak. You just take, for example, Ireland. Ireland is considered the top third wealthiest country in the world, yet we're the 10th most indebted country in the world. So which story do you want to tell? Do you want to tell that we're really wealthy, or do you want to tell it that we're really in debt? So it's how you tell the story, and it's the same for young men and young women leaving. There are lack of opportunities in many ways with employment in comparison with going abroad. Housing, I mean, we talked before about the concrete tax. Basically, that is a tax on young people because young people have to build. And this is government policy. And if you look at policy after policy, pensions, employment, like for example, the teaching qualification, they've extended it out to 2 years. When I was a teacher, it only took 1 year.
Yep.
So it takes students more money to qualify, and then it's 1 year less pension, it's 1 year less in a permanent job.
All right, Joe, come here. I want to bring you back on. I want to bring you back on and talk about the investment in history and culture and what have you. But I don't have time because we've just up against 10. But what we'll do is we'll arrange to have that conversation again, because I think it's the same but somewhat separate. And I really do have to break for the news. Dr. Joe Kelly, is always great to chat to you. You know, I appreciate that. Thank you. Imagine why. All right, back after the news and obituary notices. Have your say, by the way. 07491 25000. Caroline O'Neill will speak to you. Or text to WhatsApp 0860 25000.